all I ever wanted was to come out the other side and be with you. I was wondering, I mean, do you think I'm a traitor or something?
You?
Well, do you think I've collaborated with the Chosen or something?
No.
You know, I thought of you, I think, what Ellie have wanted, and I tried to do it.
Jack.
Help me, Ellie,
How?
Well, tell me you've still got faith in me.
Of course I have.
I couldn't handle it if you'd...
If what?
If you'd shut me up something I didn't do.
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 37 of Conversations on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Maggie.
Hey.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 3, Episode 37, the screenplay was done by Carrie Rose. It was directed by John Reed. And the episode synopsis were read out by Tamsin.
The Mulrats search for the missing Amber and Trudy, but Bray has his own ideas on their whereabouts. Lex struggles with jealousy while Jack struggles to reconnect with Ellie.
Hey, did anyone see where Jack and Ellie went?
I saw them slink off just before.
They probably went off to smooch in a corner somewhere.
They're so lucky, being in love.
Or they could just be avoiding Bray's speech-making, like Amber and Trudy.
Hey, okay, that's it. I'm not going to wait a second longer. It's time those girls came down to celebrate.
So, yeah, panel, I mean, considering that the Chosen have only just been defeated, and the fact that they are still kind of using exterior shots of them all that have Chosen in them, and not forgetting Moz and her mob hanging around, like, what did you make of the kind of nonchalant attitude concerning the Morax's disappearance?
They don't really care at all, do they?
A privileged position that they have no right to have, to be honest. Mm. Like, to feel that secure that nobody would come after you, nobody, even though you've got people screaming outside your mall, demanding justice, demanding you do something. They've made it very clear they're unhappy with how you've handled the last situation. And then two of your members go missing. And you're a little nonchalant to not consider for a second that they could be in danger. I mean, the mall isn't this big. You guys are literally at the bottom of the stairs. You're in the center of the mall. Trudy and Amber should be able to literally hear you from where they are in housewares. Okay? If you looked up there, you might see one of them waving in the doorway. That is how close you are in proximity to them. So if calling to them isn't giving you any results, that you have to literally send a search party and go in separate directions to find them in this building, I would immediately think something was wrong.
Right.
I would not be like, gee, what did those two get up to? You know what I mean? I'd be like, something's wrong. Mm. You know what I mean? Why wouldn't they answer? Why wouldn't they, unless they couldn't answer? Like, I would immediately think, we literally just ended a war and we've got people who are upset with us. A lot of people who are upset with us. I would think something was wrong.
You would think?
Yeah, you'd think.
I agree. And it's also, who has gone missing? Amber and Trudy. Amber's become a figurehead because of the trial. People who probably didn't know her before now know who she is. And Trudy obviously is the former Supreme Mother. So it's not like it's just two random Mulrats that didn't turn up. These are really, really big figures if you have an axe to grind against the Mulrats.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, they were the two people who were like, this is our idea. So they weren't like reluctantly joining the party. The party was their idea. They would not miss it because of some whimsical thing that just came up. They wouldn't just disappear. Like, why don't you assume something's wrong immediately when you call them and they don't answer? like, come on, where could they possibly be that they wouldn't have mentioned, you know, like, or they wouldn't be back yet, you know, like a trip to the bathroom wouldn't take this long. You guys should be more concerned immediately, in my opinion.
Mm. I also thought it was really interesting that the only person who was really suspect was Celine, because she was like, Trudy would never leave Brady willingly.
It's messed up when Celine is the most logical person in the situation.
she's kind of dropping a couple of truth bombs in this episode. Like, she's more switched on, it appears, than a lot of the other characters when it comes to the possibilities of what might have happened, and also that it's suspect that they've just disappeared. I mean, like, Lex is there going, oh, Amber, she's probably making life and death choices about lip gloss. It's like, do you know her at all? Like...
I get it. Whoever wrote this wanted to show the escalation of tension of them going from not being concerned to then having a reason to be concerned. Mm. But it's just silly that they're not concerned immediately, considering who's disappeared. And that, as Celine states, there is zero reason for either of these two to go wandering off so suddenly, rather than attend the party that they said we should have.
Yeah, the attitude is just, it's just crazy to have. Really is.
If I was Bray, I'd be like, wait, what? Where are they? Like, I would be, my teeth would be on edge immediately if those two. Amber literally just let the only chosen we're prosecuting go free. Mm. And I've already had, she's been threatened. She's been threatened in this mall, okay? And she's not coming down to dinner. What's going on? Even if he doesn't give a crap about Trudy, which most of them don't. But the point is, like, I would immediately, my hackles would be raised. Like, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't do this.
Yeah, and I'm so glad, like, Celine did say, oh, she would never leave Brady. At this point in time, do you think she would ever leave her out of sight? Like, no, come on. Why would she leave Brady?
I love how they try to turn them all into a labyrinth in this episode. They've got all these curtains, and so they want you to think that there's, the space is bigger than it is. And it's like, you could stand right there at the fountain and just call for somebody, and they should hear you.
Should be able to hear you.
There are so many hiding.
It's a small mall. I love when we see Ellie just ripping a few curtains as if, like, where could they be hiding?
Great search method, Ellie. If they were in any of those spaces, they would have heard you. And if they're in distress, you're not giving any of those spaces enough time to spot a person who might be in distress.
Yeah, but let's be fair to Ellie. She's really just using it as a way to run away from Jack.
Which is screwed up! Like, I mean, not even just that she's doing that to Jack, but it's like, why aren't you really looking?
I know.
Like, why don't you care?
But none of them seem to care. They all have this apathy. Like, Alice and Ned go off and have sex. I'm assuming that's probably what Lex and Tyson did as well. And then you've got Casey stashing away food. And then you've got, like, Ellie and Jack running around the mall talking about their relationship. Like, nobody cares!
They never learn. They never learn.
No.
Some, like, you've been through this. You've had people go missing, you know? And it's weird that they showed more concern for missing people in season one when they barely knew each other and had fewer bonds. Fewer reasons to care about anyone when food was an issue, when one less mouth to feed would actually be advantageous, when they had to decide whether to even keep a pregnant girl because can we take care of her? We can barely feed ourselves. They had more concern when someone went missing then than they do now, despite everything they've been through and the possibility of danger or the fact, the history of what happens when someone goes missing. It's never been good. Like, come on. Like, so how can you not learn? How can we be in season three, have another kidnapping, and these guys are still like offering up the most asinine excuses as to what could have happened rather than the most obvious things that could have happened?
They just went on a walk.
they just went for a walk.
They needed fresh air.
The interesting thing about that, though, is if they actually press the button of interest, that kind of means that it's one of them who must have done this, since there isn't anyone else in the mall. They're all in the front, so no one can get in. So if they were to then become suspicious, that would obviously lead to them knowing that it's one of them. Spoiler alert.
Like, well, who wasn't here?
Yeah.
That would require brain.
Yeah, and we know they've run out of those.
But I love how they all come in like it's an Agatha Christie mystery. It's like, oh, where is Ellie and Jack? And then where is... And they just kind of appear.
Yeah, the apathy is totally wrong.
But I think it kind of exemplifies the issue that we've had with this entire season, which is they have to write the characters stupid, because if they don't, the plot and what is happening is so paper thin that if the characters were at all capable or thought like normal people, then they'd be like, this is ridiculous.
Very true.
Yes, it's all in the writing.
Mm.
Ellie, is she all right?
Well, I mean Ellie and me.
Right. Love's young dream.
Well, that's just it. It isn't. I mean, Ellie just seems different somehow.
What do you mean?
Well, I know everyone's been going through tough times and all that, but I don't know, it's like she doesn't want me around or something.
So yeah, what are your feelings about Jack and his insecurities here?
Personally, I felt this was quite a nice piece of writing because it's not just about his insecurities, but it also talks about how he wanted things to be when he came back and that he sort of held on to that while he was in captivity. And I've done a lot of research about, you know, the Second World War, the First World War, and a lot of the men who came back struggled because the life that they wanted to go back to, you know, the women had independence and they didn't want to be sort of waiting for their husbands at home necessarily. They were out doing things. And I thought it was quite interesting, like how you build something up in your mind and it's this kind of perfect picture of how it's going to be. But then in reality, it gets shattered by things that have moved on without you, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So I liked that bit of writing in it.
I like it because it shows a lot of Jack's growth. Jack has always been insecure, but in the past, he was very toxic with his insecurities when it came to Ellie. You know, he lashed out. I love the way he addresses what he's concerned about, how mature he is being by being very straightforward with her, asking the questions he wants answers to. Are you upset with me? Did I do something? Do you think less of me because of what I had to do to survive the Chosen when I was gone? Do you, you know what I mean? Like, he goes down the roster of what his concerns are of how she must think about him because he can't understand why she's so distant and clearly avoiding any physical or emotional intimacy with him. And yet her words are saying, everything's fine. We're good. And he's like, he's become more intuitive. Like, no, everything is not fine. Your behavior is not fine. So I like that he immediately dives into, like, he self-reflects, which, wow, well done, Jack. You immediately think it might be something you have done, even though you didn't do anything wrong. But it's such a mature place for Jack to have come to, you know, because he wasn't capable of this in the past. And yet here he is addressing it calmly and just trying to clear the air immediately. And I just feel awful for him. I really do. Yeah. I feel awful for Jack.
It's so bad.
Like, I'm not mad at Ellie. I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, I hate her so much for this. She's wrong. I clearly am like, Ellie, you're in the wrong here. You need to just be honest with him. You need to think, is it Jack that you want? And he has a right to know. And you aren't helping anybody by lying to him. You're only hurting him more. You obviously don't want to hurt him, but the way you're treating him is hurting him, you know? So get off the pot. You have to decide. Do you want Jack?
Yeah.
Or do you not want Jack? And if you don't want him, you need to let him go. He deserves that. He deserves honesty from you.
I also think that the things that he says about his own insecurities are the things that she's actually done or she feels like she's done, like the collaboration. Now, we all know that Ellie was not a collaborator in the way that May was. I mean, she was forced into this by her sister. There was a Stockholm situation going on. And, you know, she is a victim in this. But the things that he says are reflecting back the way, the guilt that she feels towards him as well.
Mm, yeah.
That makes sense.
Like, I don't think those things about you, but you might think them about me.
Yeah.
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 And she probably thinks them about herself. I think that's probably why she's reluctant as well. Not just like, because I agree with you, Liz, like either keep him or let him go. But I think there's also the level of like everybody else in that mall knows what she's done and has made a judgment about it, whereas he doesn't.
Yeah.
I do think, though, I have to say, I don't know why the others are just continuing this to go on. It seems unnecessarily cruel.
Yeah,
it is.
It is.
He looks dumb, and they're allowing him to walk around, following her around, and it's sad.
Like, put him out of his misery. He was once part of your tribe.
Like, okay, I could understand them not wanting to get involved and wanting Ellie to have the chance to tell him. I get that. But it's their, they don't seem to care. You know what I mean? Like, they really don't seem to feel bad for Jack. They don't seem to give a damn that poor Jack is being led along and is in misery. He just came home and is in misery because he doesn't know what's going on. And none of them seem to care about that. Like, I could handle them being silent because you could just say, like, hey, that's their personal business and that's between them. It's not my place to tell him what was going on. I don't have a full understanding what was going on, whatever. But show that you give a damn that your friend is going through this. Like, they don't, like, Alice, you don't care what's happening to Jack and your sister. Like, her disinterest.
No, her mind's elsewhere.
Blows my mind how little she seems to care about that situation.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, she is the one who put Ellie in that situation. Yes.
She's completely at fault for this and doesn't care at all.
Maybe that's why she's distanced. Who knows?
Oh, I don't know. I've got to be honest, I don't think they know how they're writing Alice. I think better writers, like you say, Maggie, she would want to try and avoid the subject because she feels culpable for it. But I don't think these writers, I think they've completely forgotten Alice's involvement in this because it feels like they have.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's be honest, season two Alice, however hard it was, she would have put him out of his misery when he came to talk to her.
She would have cared enough to try to give him some advice or a gentle word or something. She was.
And she would have gone to Ellie and been like, you need to tell him.
Yeah, like, Ellie, you can't do this. You can't treat someone like that. You know, back in the day, she would be like, Jack, he's a boy. He's a dumb boy, but he has feelings, Ellie. You know what I mean? And you got to be respectful of those feelings. Like, but her lack of care is just, like, how much more can you assassinate her character? I don't get it. I don't understand.
Nice. A lot.
I don't know who decided to, like, write Alice this way. How could you have watched season two and then written her the way you have in season three? Like, I don't know.
That just disgusted me when she just shoved the spaghetti in her mouth and just tried to ignore him. Like, this is not the Alice that I knew in season two. Like, awful reactions to this whole situation.
I've got to say, I couldn't believe Alice falling for all that guff Ned was giving her about how he got bullied at school.
Could have believed it. I hate the way that scene is shot because, again, it's another moment where you're tapping into the potential for Ned, okay?
Mm.
And you're working on Ned showing her his humanity so that you can at least maybe buy her seeing that humanity and falling for that humanity. But then when she hugs him and she reassures him, you're not alone, you've got me. Look at his weird, creepy smile when she hugs him, when she's reassuring him. That smile makes it sound like he was lying. Like, he was making it all up just to... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really creepy. I don't think that's what's supposed to be happening, but the smile makes it sound like, ha, I got her. I just laid it on thick and she bought it. You know what I mean?
I totally thought that's what was meant to be happening. That's cool.
Oh, that 100%.
Why don't you direct it like that rather than make it a sincere moment where he's actually being vulnerable and expressing how alone he often feels and ostracized and... You know, he's actually grateful that here's somebody who sees him.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from all his social awkwardness and his horribleness, somebody sees what little good there is in him and thinks he's worth it. Why would you have him smile like a psycho who's like, I got away with lying to her? Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, but they undercut Ned all of the time to the detriment, I think, of the performance that Bevan is giving. They undercut all of his sincerity, like you say. And they're not sure whether they want to make him this oaf that we all dislike or whether there's this chink of who he really is or what it is. But every time they undercut all the time. And it's sad because Bevan sells it pretty well until that smile. And then it's just like, oh my God.
And then you're left with, where were they going with this character? What was the point? Was it just to torture Alice? Because why? Why?
Well, let's be real. I feel like it's to torture us at this point.
I don't know. I just think it's far more interesting if you're going to have someone like Ned do such a horrible thing, like kidnap two women to get his own way. I think it's far more interesting if he's actually got good points. Like, a villain is more interesting if they've got good in them. They've got reasons that people would love them than if they're just, oh, it's just because they're bad. They're just bad. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, humanity is not like that. Even Hitler had people who enjoyed his company. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, like, if you're going to write someone doing something horrible, it's far more interesting to find out that they are capable of good and they're capable of love. And there are people who see that and love them regardless of their horrible actions. That makes them an interesting character, you know? But they didn't know what they were doing with Ned. It's like it changes from episode to episode.
I mean, I was going to say, like, when he did that whole speech about being the outcast, him and the kids, and like, when was the last time you actually looked after the kids or did anything with them? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you tried to lay that on a few episodes ago, like, you know, the past with the kids and stuff, but he does nothing with them. The interaction with them is very minimal at best. It's like,
he doesn't have to anymore.
It would help if they didn't always film it as though he was reluctantly looking after them.
That's,
know?
How it feels like
they've never really shown, like, they show the kids have clear affection for their brother. They like to be around him, when especially if he's in a good mood. They count on him. They seem to fully believe their brother will never truly leave them. He'll always come back. So they're selling it on the kids' side. They're just never selling it on Ned's side.
No, yeah.
You know? Because I could forgive him not paying as much attention to them while they're here in the mall, because they're safe, you know? And it's like a relief for him to be like, oh, I can finally breathe. They're not in danger. Most of the time, we were always in danger, and I had to have my head on a swivel to keep them safe. This is nice. This is actually kind of nice to be somewhere where I know nobody here would hurt them, and I can actually focus on something that I might want. But they don't do any of this. Like, these are all ideas, and I'm surprised that not a single one of these ideas popped into their head when they were working on this character, when they were workshopping him and what they wanted out of him, and just a waste of a good performer.
Do we think it comes back to the clear lack of planning that I felt throughout, that we've all kind of felt throughout season three?
It could, you know, it could, but I feel like even on the fly, you can find a way to, if, like, oh, this is the only episode you're in charge of. You have no control over any other. For example, remember when Harry actually stepped in to write an episode after we'd had nothing but trash episodes, and then we were like, oh my gosh, you could tell this was Harry. Harry had that one episode to do something with it, and he did. You know what I mean? It's clear he didn't have any say in where this was going to go or what had come before, but he made his episode and the writing count. He actually tried to delve into the characters. So I can't give them the excuse that the reason that in any given episode, Ned is all over the place due to the planning of the whole season, you know, because it's like, you could have still made this work just in this episode, just in this scene, and you're not trying. Why aren't you trying?
Yeah, they wanted us to hate Ned from the beginning, and then they tried to pull it back when they realized they were going to do a relationship with Alice, and then they still made us hate him. It's, I mean, it's like he was made to be hated. That he wasn't made to be liked.
And then you have these moments where it's like, maybe they wanted the audience to hate him, but they were really bad at showing, well, why Alice would like him. Like, they clearly struggled with that. And it's like, you've done it before. You have shown hateable characters still being able to charm another character and making them fall for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, we may not have agreed with Lex and Zandra, but we at least understood why Zandra liked him. We understood how he laid the charm on with her, how he was able to seduce her with his swagger. You know what I mean? Like, even though we're like, this is toxic and unhealthy, we at least got it. We understood what it was, because Andra was a solid character. We understood what drew her to a person, what she was attracted to, what she wanted out of life, what she would want from a partner. And then they were able to show that Lex had those qualities. That's what she was drawn to. while making him absolutely despicable to everybody else.
Mm.
And they clearly cannot handle doing that with Ned. You can make him despicable to everybody and still write him in a way that you can see he's offering Alice things that she would be attracted to. But he's not really doing anything that convinces me Alice would be attracted to him.
Yeah.
But that's because Alice also doesn't make sense anymore. What does Alice want? Who is she? What does she care about? I don't know anymore.
Mm.
How did this turn into a Ned discussion?
No idea. No clue.
Ned is kind of the emblem that is everything that is wrong with season 3, I think. It's kind of very much connected to his character. So I think that's why we talk about him a lot. And I think that's probably why we're going to talk about Jay a lot coming soon, you know? Because a lot of the issues, you can sum them up in some of these characters.
Pride. He's gone and it's your fault.
How'd you figure that?
Going on about the rebirth of the Morrats?
So?
You know he's not one of us. How was he supposed to feel?
I don't know, mate. You know what? I really don't care right now.
Great! After everything he did for us. Well, I can think of someone who does care. Amber.
So let's focus on May and Bray here first. Like, how did you feel about May stirring the pot and Bray's kind of single-mindedness and accusations to Pride?
That's what May does. Stirs the pot all the time. Especially when she feels wrong.
Yes, yeah. She does feel wronged because she feels like Bray has pushed Pride out of the circle. And so she no longer has access to him. And his tree-loving lace is gone.
I suppose there are worse ways to get Pride back. But this is such mediocre writing to get us there.
Mm.
Like, I'm not impressed with that at all. It's easy, yeah. Like it's real. Like if just on paper, it's sensible. Like, okay, I could point A gets us to point B. May feels betrayed by this tribe and all these people. Nobody sticking up for her. Nobody having her back after what she did to help them during the Chosen Occupation. So she's bitter at everybody. And the only thing she liked was Pride. And now he's gone. So, yeah, like, fine. I guess I can reason that May is acting like a fool and coming up with the most illogical reason for Amber and Trudy's disappearance because of that. You got Bray, who still has his insecurities about Pride. Okay, fine. I guess that's reason enough for him to actually believe that this is what Amber would do and that's what Trudy would do. Okay. sure. I guess he's in his feelings, you know, and the scene with him and Pride, like, I feel like, yeah, the dots connect, but just barely. There's no effort put into this.
Yeah.
But yeah, they could have done it worse, I guess. That's the best thing I can say about it. It could have been worse. It could have been a worse way to get Pride back. That's the best thing I can say about it.
That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, it just looks so bad when it comes to who Bray thinks Amber is. That she's the sort of person that would leave without saying anything. I mean, I know she's done that before.
I was going to say, to be fair, she's done it to him before, twice.
But we're supposed to forget about that at various points, aren't we? We're supposed to have a little touch of amnesia sometimes around why she went. And again, I mean, it comes to if she just had a head injury and we hadn't all had all that stupid look at me and Bray with this child going against everything she knew Bray was, and if she just stumbled out with a head injury, it would have been much more easy to excuse these sorts of, like, but it makes their relationship look so weak because he just doesn't trust her. And like you said, he has reasons not to trust her because she did this awful betrayal. She betrayed, like, all of them. But still, it looks so bad. It's just, yeah.
I'd like a better conversation to get us to the point where Bray would believe that Amber had gone after Pride when she, last time he spoke to her, like an hour ago, she was like, okay, I'm going to go get ready for this party that I freaking suggested. You know, I just feel like you'd need an extra scene for him to jump on what May just said. You know what I mean? Like, you would need something more. Like, he completely ignores Celine's suggestion. even though hers is the most freaking logical suggestion of what happened to the girls. So it's just like, I would have liked a better conversation to get anybody to the thought of she left. They left together. You know what I mean? I would like a different reason for why he goes after Pride, you know?
I mean, another reason could easily have been that he knew that she felt a bit guilty about what was going on with Pride, and maybe she went after him just to say, hey, I know you don't want to be part of the Mallrats, but do you just want to come back for a drink and something to eat?
Even that, you know, just I'd love a better reason for why he goes after them. I wish, you know, I just wish they had given this conversation a few more drafts to get us to a place where it would make sense for him to think at all that Amber, who is carrying his child and literally told him, I can't do this without you.
Mm-hmm.
I am committed to doing this with you. I'm committed to staying here this time. As far as he knows, they are on the up and up. They're cool.
Yeah.
I just need a better conversation for him to believe that she and his niece's mother would just wander out rather and not tell anyone, not tell anybody, we got to go do this real quick or whatever. It's like he seems so convinced that, yes, that's what Amber did. She's run off with Pride, and Trudy just decided to go along because she's sick of you. Like, I just need a better reason for him to have latched onto that as the reason. That's what, that must have happened. I must find Pride. You know what I mean? I need something better than the conversation we got. It's a really bad conversation.
I mean, a more obvious reason to have Bray go after Pride is because he does think that Amber and Trudy are missing, and he needs Pride to help them find him. Yeah, find them. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Than having what, like, he actually knows that he's just left, and he needs somebody who's going to be the voice of reason, because he's going to be stuck there with, like, Lex, Ebony, Maze chiming in. Nobody's going to listen to Celine because nobody does. And that would make more sense that he actually went out to get Pride to get his help.
Oh, we have to let him and Pride be antagonistic to each other, which is why
always
Pride's attitude towards, you know, Amber and Bray's relationship changes from what it was, where he was completely accepting of that relationship and their love and was totally fine with it until she said, I'm not going back to the Guyans. And then you're like, what did you expect was going to happen, Pride? Now suddenly he's all uppity and has a problem with Bray, because that's what the script wants them to be. The script wants them to be butting heads and it to be about jealousy, you know, even though it wasn't that way. So no, Bray can't go to Pride for help. Mm. He has to go and accuse him of something absolutely ridiculous. Where do you think he's hiding her? The minute you saw him and saw he was alone, your questioning should have changed immediately. Because where do you think Trudy and Amber are? In his duffel bag? Like, where are they, Bray? The fact that he sees Pride alone and still asks him, where are they? Like, I would have seen, I'd understand if he saw them alone and was like, rap, they're not with you. Fine, he believed this ridiculous thing, but he should have a reaction to seeing clearly they're not with Pride. That should make him even more scared and worried.
Mm.
Because I latched onto this, at least I would know where they were, and I didn't find them with you. There's a problem. Something's really, really wrong, because I can't think of any other reason they would disappear. And so his line of questioning with Pride, his attitude, everything should change at seeing that Pride's alone. Like, but no, where are they? Is Amber with you? Pride should have looked around like, does it look like she's with me? Where, Bray? Where do you think I'm hiding her? Like, seriously. Like, why didn't anyone check to see if their stuff was missing? Like, if you think they just decided to wander off, they changed their mind in the middle of getting ready for the party, why didn't anyone even look to see if their belongings were gone? I still can't believe they would believe that Trudy would do this. But if you're going to, try to make it make sense. Try. Just put a tiny bit of effort. I'm asking for a sprinkle. Just a taste of effort that they, their things are gone. Then you could at least understand the character's belief being enforced by seeing that something's missing. Some of their stuff is gone. So maybe they did run off. But you literally saw one of their belongings on the floor in the room. Like, they didn't take anything with them. They clearly didn't wander off with pride, you moron.
My question is, how were they actually taken out of the mall?
Oh my
gosh!
Nobody
seeing them.
Like, nope, how not doing that again. Nope.
Through that hole in the basement. In the basement.
We're not going down that rabbit hole again. We don't know. Magic.
Magic.
Always magic.
I mean, and yeah, just to finish this off, let's go back to Celine and all of this. I wanted to ask you a question. So after giving like her support previously, like, how do you feel about Bray not having any time for her during this crisis?
I think it just made sense.
I think it kind of makes sense. Oh, yeah.
Snap.
I don't think that Bray actually listens to anything Celine says. She's just this panicky woman that appears every now and then and kind of flips her lid. And he has to either talk her off a roof or, you know, calm her down, get someone to calm her down. And I just, like, even though she's speaking sense and she also wants support, he's not in a place to give it to her and he's not really listening to her either.
Did like that moment. I think it's an important moment for Celine. Like, if we want to look at the whole of her character arc and what's coming down the pipe for Celine, This is a really nice moment and it's necessary. From the moment we've met Celine, she has needed someone to take care of her, to solve her problems.
Yeah.
Only when she's feeling very secure about the ground she's standing on does she seem incredibly confident and will be like, I can handle this. Go away, Ryan. I don't need you around all the time. But that's just because she's secure. Everything is working out for her. She feels safe. And but most of the time, Celine is grasping, somebody please hold my hand. Somebody please give me a direction. I really love this moment where she's bringing this concern to him. But the real reason she's bringing it to him is because she's afraid of what's going to happen next. And she's looking for reassurance. And for the first time, someone looks Celine in the face and says, you're going to have to deal with this on your own. I can't hold your hand. I don't give a crap about your fears. I am worried about the mother of my child. Okay? For once, you're going to have to think about other people and take care of yourself, Celine, because other people have problems and they can't toss them aside every time you have a problem. I think that's really important for Celine. I think she takes it to heart, having someone literally tell her that. You are the only one who can fix whatever's going on with you, Celine. I can't do it for you. I don't have the time. I've got my own problems, you know?
It's big girl pan.
Yeah.
All true. However, she was just talked down from the roof. He could have been
a little bit
more tact in his approach.
Well, this is Bray, though, in this moment. You know, he doesn't have tact. He doesn't have it to give.
And see, that's why I like it. It makes sense for Bray to snap at her in this moment.
Yes,
this
isn't it's
like,
real.
Oh yeah.
Right. It's not like Bray's just chilling and everything's going great for him. Because any other time, we know Bray would drop everything to
absolutely
her.
Sit there, placate her, do what needed, say what needed to be said.
Everything. Right now, he just doesn't have it in him. No.
Just like everybody else will do.
Exactly. And so that's why I thought it was important for Celine, because I'm not saying it was nice, you know, especially considering where her headspace is and what she's gone through. I'm just saying it was important.
Mm-hmm.
It was important for Celine to hear it. It doesn't mean that what she's feeling isn't valid or anything like that. Like, she's being scared for no good reason. She's got very good reason to be scared that this might all start all over again. And she barely survived it the first time. So yeah, her being scared, all of that, going to someone that you consider your leader for reassurance who always gives it to you, all of that. I do feel bad for her, but I'm not mad at Bray in this moment for giving her a harsh truth, because he's got bigger problems than her fear, you know? And again, everybody's always handheld Celine. And she never seems to care about anybody else's problems. Hers are the most important problem in the room, and everybody's supposed to help her. And right now, Bray can't. He's in no headspace to hold your hand, Celine. Sorry you're scared. My baby mom is missing. Don't you think I'm scared?
We are all scared. Well, not everybody. No, let me take that back. Not everybody's scared. Take that back. Some of them don't even care. Fine.
A lot of them don't even care.
2% of the mall is scared.
2%.
Can you imagine if these were your friends? Oh, you'd be so depressed.
See, you know, it made sense back in season one that they would have to put up with these things because it was about survival. There really wasn't anywhere else to go. Like, if you found a safe place, you're mm-hmm. gonna have to put up with the people in the one safe place you found, okay? Yeah. But you guys don't have to be in this mall together anymore. And the way you treat each other, I don't know why you are.
Yeah.
You could go anywhere. You don't need this anymore. You barely tolerate each other. Just go live peacefully somewhere else at this point.
And to think that this dinner and this party was to reunite them all and, you know, they're a tribe again. And
it would be beautiful if that actually had a purpose. Like, somebody was thinking of a theme. The dinner was supposed to bring them all together. And the dinner doesn't happen, and all we see is that these guys are not united. They're not all together. I don't think that's purposeful, though, but it would be great if it was, there was a meaning behind it,
He just needed a reason for everybody to have to be in one spot at one time. So when people didn't show up, that's why.
Trudy and Amber really were the only ones interested in reunification. Maybe Tyzan. Everybody else was like, whatever. Sure, Tyzan, I'm
hungry. Just wanted to hold hands with everyone.
She's like, you guys haven't let me hold hands with you ever since Ryan left. I need it.
It's been so long.
While we're on the subject of Tyzan, and I know I bring this up every time I'm here, why is she still wearing the Supreme Mother outfit? Why? Why did she go to the unification party and not get into her new tribal gear that we see her wear later? Why has she changed her hair, but not her outfit?
Because it's supposed to represent the separation between her and Lex still on an emotional level. I mean, that's what I would be thinking if I was the costume designer.
Or she's just wearing it for the Guardian.
I just... no, you're not putting those rumors to bed like this, Tyzan.
It was good of you to save him.
So you've come to tell me I'm a heroine?
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh? Well, how far would you go?
Well, I'm as curious as he is. You don't do anything without a reason.
Well, did you have anything in mind?
I can't think like you, Ebony, but I know that you use anyone to your own advantage. But you're not going to do that with Luke, are you?
So yeah, panel, I mean, we have kind of touched on Ebony kind of already positioning herself for power and that Luke may be of use, but like, what do you think of kind of Ellie's kind of acute reaction to what Ebony is actually doing here?
I think it works on two fronts. One, she knows Ebony's not trustworthy. It's nice to know that somebody remembers that Ellie can be a threat. That's nice. Yeah, sure, you were with the Rebels. It was to your advantage to be with the Rebels. If you could have gotten in with the Chosen and taken over, you totally would have done that. Now, again, it's not like the writers are making it clear that that's what Ellie remembers about Ebony, but her being cautious of Ebony makes perfect sense to me on that front. And two, yeah, she likes Luke. She's interested in him, and here's another woman paying attention to him, and he's grateful to this other woman. As we'll see, the structure of Ellie and Luke's relationship begins to fracture once again, now that they both have their freedom. She went from being the most important person in Luke's life, the only thing he was living for, and doesn't actually react very well when Luke starts to find other things to live for. And Luke also has problems when Ellie finds other things to live for. Again, that messed up attachment they got. Under those circumstances, once those circumstances change, they really can't find a balance with each other. So I think the moment with Ellie responding this way just works very well. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
It is nice to see the scheming light in Ebony's eyes again.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Welcome back.
Nice to feel the vibe. Yeah, it's nice to feel the vibe that she's clearly working on something. It's like, oh, it's good to see you again. What is it? What have you got up your sleeve?
But it is scary, you know, because she's got her eyes on Luke there for that help and whatever she is working on.
Well, she's not just got her eyes on Luke for that, though, has she? Because was it just me or is there chemistry between them? It's probably just me.
Maybe that's just good acting.
I think Ebony has chemistry with almost everyone.
Yeah, she's just really good when they let her be
good. Yeah, she's so good.
Mm.
Yeah. She knows how to lay it on sweet when she's trying to win somebody over. I like that Luke, who is so hell-bent on, I can't live if I can't have Ellie, I can't live with my guilt, I'm going to go out there and just face the consequences. Mm. And once that gun was in his face and he was saved from it, he gets a perspective shift. Like, oh, maybe I really don't want to die. Though I thought it was a little heavy-handed, his actual dialogue saying, Amber was right. My guilt really is the worst thing. Like, okay, thank you. Thank you for trying to convince us that you guys did a good job with that. I'm not convinced you did a good job with it, but whatever. That was a little laying it on thick there.
The whole issue with that thing is, who besides Ellie knew that would be such a big problem? That would be such a punishment for him. Who besides her would know that? Not Amber.
He could have been faking his remorse, but whatever. It doesn't matter. I think this is a pretty decent scene. These two giving in some pretty good performances. And as you guys said, Ebony usually has really good chemistry with everybody. So her and Luke were great. Her and Ellie, I thought, were also very great. I thought that was a good scene between the two of them. And I thought it worked for me.
Mm.
I liked Ebony's really laying it on thick with Luke. And he wouldn't know to look out for this. That this is it's a trap. You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't know. But Ellie's, her cautiousness, like, what do you want with him? What are you doing? You know? And Ebony's like, what? I see it. He's sincere. You know, the guy deserves a chance. Ellie's like, ah. And I love it. She's like, it sounds like you're warning me off your territory. And Ellie, who has at this moment made her declaration for Jack, doesn't want to admit, I actually want Luke, but I would be a bad person if I chose Luke. It's like, no, I'm just, he's a good person. He deserves a chance, you know? And just, I liked it. Nice performances. Pretty decent dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, being irreverent for a moment, we also know that both Ebony and Ellie are aware of what Luke's tendencies towards charismatic leaders and how that can go south pretty fast.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, like, Luke, have you forgotten Ebony was in the Locos with you?
Yeah, you're right. They know each other.
Exactly.
He's focused on the fact that she's one of the people who hated me the most and, you know, said some awful things to me when I was in that cage. She was really hoping for my downfall, and she saved my life. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's starting to feel a little hope for the first time that maybe there is an after, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something beyond my guilt and the crimes I committed. Maybe there can be something more. Maybe Ellie's right about that. Maybe I am worth saving. If Ebony would save my life, she could have let me get my head saved in, and she didn't.
Yeah.
And he's just not in a place where he can imagine, why else would she save my life? You know, takes him a while to realize, oh my gosh, that's why she saved me, you know?
Oh yeah, she's manipulative.
He's just very, very in denial about everything, to be honest.
I'm telling you, Luke is a tragic figure. He really is.
I don't care for his character. I don't care for him. Not as much as, you know, Celine or May. I don't hate him. I don't think he's a good character.
See, I'm the opposite. His character arc is one of my favorites in the entire season. Like, in the show, to be honest. Mm. One of my favorite character journeys.
He's very compelling. He's a very compelling figure.
The dramatics.
I think he's also quite sad, isn't he, as well? Because he's desperate to make amends. And his desperation just brings him more trouble. He just gets in deeper and deeper with Ebony. He gets in deeper and deeper with the Guardian. And the whole thing starts up again.
He never sees it coming. That's what blows my mind about Luke. He is good at taking orders and following through and seeing that stuff gets done. Not an idea guy.
Well, it's also different levels of intelligence, isn't there? Someone can be quite emotionally intelligent, but they can also be, you know, you've got, like, Jack, for instance, is a great example of someone who's very intelligent, but lacks the emotional intelligence that should go along with it, if you know what I mean. And Luke could be the other way. He's emotionally intelligent, but he lacks the intelligence that follows on.
Luke smacks of like an 1800s poet.
Oh my god, yeah. I can talk about this for ages, but he's definitely Shelley. Definitely. He's not Byron, he's Shelley.
Has that vibe about him. Dramatics and all, you know.
Even the way he wants to build this better world, but he's not going to put the effort that needs to take to do it, and he's going to do questionable things around it as well. He's definitely Shelley. He's definitely got a wife in the country with two kids, and then also having an affair with Mary Shelley, and also having an affair with her sister, but saying like workers' rights. Yeah, definitely.
And let his guilt eat him alive the whole time. I don't know how I get myself in these situations.
Yeah, I don't know what to do to fix this.
Poor me.
Oh, no.
You treat him like he's an animal. Why don't you bring it to him yourself?
What?
Okay, you might be nuts, but I'm not going in there. Forget it.
After being tarred and feathered, May, I thought you, of all people, might treat him with some compassion.
Discuss panel.
For both being who they are. Mm. Like, the scene felt, their behavior felt true to them, what's been established. It makes sense that May would not trouble herself to give this, make sure he actually eats. She's going to do the bare minimum. She's on food duty. She brought him his food. Whether or not he eats it, she does not care. She puts it within reach. All he'd have to do is put his hand outside the cage and get his food. That is far as she's going. That makes sense for May. And it makes sense for Tysan to be like, what is wrong with you? You know, and to even point out, I thought you'd have more compassion considering how you've been treated for your crimes, May. You know, that's what I can say about it. Like, it's in character. I don't feel either way about their points of view, to be honest, because I feel like Tysan is taking her compassion talk too far. You know, May is in a mood today. So I'm just kind of like, I don't really care about either of your points of view, to be honest, because nobody wants to find the middle ground. So all I can say is I think they're doing what they would do.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's just that continuation of the black and white discussion about this. If you are a person with compassion, then you have to be what Tysan is. That's what you have to literally be in the cage with the dangerous criminal, brushing their hair.
Giving him a sponge bath.
Right. That makes you a good person. And if you're someone who's like, no, they're a freaking criminal, you have to be evil. You got to be so bad. You got to be like May, where you wouldn't even make sure they're getting their food. You just barely bring it to them. Like, there's no middle ground. Like, that's the way it's been set up. That's how this conflict has been set up. You know, you're good or you're bad, and there's no place in the middle to be. Whereas where the most of us would be, somewhere in the middle. So it's almost unrelatable, to be honest.
I mean, I'm a fan of the podcast, so I listened to one of you guys' earlier episodes, and I think it was you, Liz, who said about it feels a very childlike view of the world where everything is black and white. And I thought that was very interesting because I agree. It, like you say, most of us would be morally more ambiguous. But because they are actually still children, even though they've been through all this upheaval, they are still kids. And they do have this moralizing tone that is very black and white.
I just think it's dangerous for the narrative to push this idea that that's how morals work, especially when you're talking to a child audience. You know, from the moment they had to decide whether to put the guardian on trial, from the moment, like the way they did it, they made sure all the, you know, the characters that are considered good agreed to not try him, and all the characters that are considered not so good wanted him to be on trial. They made it such a black and white situation, and it's like, that's what you're teaching young impressionable people, how you should view the situation. And they wouldn't have done that in earlier seasons, you know. So for me, I find it uninteresting, to be honest. I'm just like,
I think that's where, you know, them simplify as best they can for the younger. Wasn't this show meant to be towards younger teenagers?
Yeah, but I'm not going to give them a pass for that, because season one, they were willing to explore the moral ambiguity of these situations. And it's like, if you are capable of it. Now, again, if they'd always been this way, I wouldn't give the show any flack for it. But then again, we probably wouldn't have fallen in love with it and wouldn't be doing a podcast about it 20 freaking years later.
Yeah.
So, like, I just can't give them a pass, because they did start being, they when they started, they had way more to say to their young audience about these kind of issues and explored it. And now they're just being lazy.
This is such a complicated subject to pick up as well. You're right. You know, they're not, like you say, they're being lazy and they're not addressing it, which then brings back to the point, why pick it up in the first place?
Yeah,
why not just have the Guardian disappear?
If you don't want to do it, then don't do it. You know, they handled the subject of sexual assault better in season one. Mm. And then you see a repeat of it in season two. And it's much more simplified in season two compared to how it was in season one. You know, it's just like, don't do it. If you don't want to explore it properly, then don't bother. Nobody's forcing you to put these storylines in your show. I'll never forgive them for having a better discussion about punishing somebody or the death penalty when these kids were younger in their life and like younger actors and looked like children having the discussion compared to now where they all look like young adults and they're trying to have the same discussion and it's lame ass. Like, I'll never forgive them for that. Like, no, this is bad. This is bad.
I would also add, I thought it was interesting that Tai-San sort of claps back at May when she mentions about May being tarred and feathered. And having listened again to episodes that you guys have done, something that you also picked up was when May kind of looked to Tai-San for some support when they were in the cafe in one episode. And then Tai-San was basically like, no, that wasn't the case. I'm not anything like you. And I thought that was quite interesting because we know how Tai-San really feels about what happened to May and that she is angry with Lex for having done it. But yet, even though she felt that way, she still used it against May as a way to kind of say, hey, listen, I would have thought that you, of all people, could have understood this.
This is Tai-San's villain origin story. I don't know.
I don't have anything good to say about her.
My love for her has taken such a nosedive. I'm like, I can't deal with you, okay? I just can't. I don't like what you're doing. You're annoying the crap out of me and your high horse. Sometimes you have a scene where I'm like, okay, I see where you're coming from. But they just take it too far that I can't stand it right now.
I'm not going to lie. I'm still a Tai-San fan.
I'll always be one. I just don't like her very much right now. I just don't want to. And again, it's probably not even her fault. It's just the way this is all being written and simplified. And I'm kind of not interested in either side. I almost side more with the bad people who wanted him punished. That's how bad this writing is.
For real.
No, but that's the message. If you wanted the Guardian punished, you're a bad person.
Even you can't have a good reason for combing his hair.
It was knotted. He couldn't do it himself.
You are destroying us. Don't you know that?
No, Lex, you're the one who's destroying this relationship. You're so obsessed with the Guardian, you can't see reality.
Now, it seems very clear to me. I have a wife who spends most of her time with some sicko.
Panel, who do you believe is the one that is actually destroying their relationship?
Both of them, I think. I think they're both doing it. Because when I was on a couple of weeks ago, they were having a very similar argument then. They keep having the same argument over and over again, and the outcome cannot change because he wants her to admit that more happened with the Guardian than actually did. Now, obviously, we know that they got married. He hasn't told him that. But yes, it's clear that she never viewed that as the marriage that she has with Lex. That was just something she had to do to survive because the Guardian was out of his tree at that point. But the outcome of this can never change. They can never tell the other person what they want to hear. And also, there's a couple of other things. Firstly, Lex trying to change to become a better person for Tai-San. You can't do that for anybody. You have to do that with yourself. You have to do it because you actually want to improve, not because you're trying to show off to somebody. And secondly, I think the whole situation with May, he had that coming because of what he did to her. But they have always picked each other, May and Lex. They've always been at each other's throats. And I go back to saying what I said previously. I've always thought there was a sexual element to this between both of them. And yeah, I think that. And I just thought she just knows exactly where to push his buttons. Because unlike with Bray, which felt very unrealistic, that felt like we all agreed that the way she did that with Bray, mentioning Pride and Amber running off together, that did not track for any of us. But this tracks more, because we know how insecure Lex is, and we know how impotent he felt being stuck on the outside. And then Tyson's not really giving him any of the reassurance that he needs. And I thought it was very interesting. But again, we're back at the same argument over and over again.
I definitely agree that they are both at fault here. And it's basically because neither one of them is able to compromise how they feel to meet each other somewhere in the middle. Both of them, you know, it's just like a wall and an implacable boulder, you know, that's where they are. They're just two rocks hitting each other right now. Lex is not able to let go of his jealousy or his insecurities and just believe his wife when she's giving him the truth. What else is she supposed to say? She told you the truth. You don't want to hear the truth. You want to, I don't know, justify your insecurities. And she's not giving you that. But Tyson is also the problem. Like, she wants to do this for the Guardian, and she is not willing at this point to compromise in any way, despite how much it's causing strife mm-hmm. between she and her husband. He's clearly unhappy with how close she is to the Guardian. It bothers mm-hmm. him, and yet she's not willing to find any other path to make this a little easier. So they're both the problem there, because they just have such a difference in how they feel about this. And I do think that's realistic, you know, that you can feel so I'm in the right that you just can't bend right now, like can't bend on this. So they're both causing that problem. You know, so, you know, they're having the same exact argument with different words constantly. And I did like what Tyson said, like when she's like, well, how can I convince you if you don't believe me? You know, I like the expression of I'm tired of doing this. I'm so tired of having the same fight, and there's literally nothing I can say, and that they both feel that way. You know, I don't give a crap about the scene with Lex, Andy, Tally, Casey, and the kids. I hate that plot line. I don't know. They clearly didn't know what to do with Casey and the kids. So that's stupid plot lines there. I don't like Lex walking in and chastising them over the freaking food. Like, why is this here? Like, I don't care about the scene, and it kind of feels like it comes out of nowhere, Lex chastising them and going off on Casey about leading kids astray. Like, what the? Where did this freaking come from? You know what I mean? Why are you so bothered that the kids stole some of the food off the table? None of you seem interested in eating it. Like, why does it matter that they took some food? Like, give me a break. There's plenty. Who cares? So I don't give a crap about that. It's dumb. Like, you could have found it. I just think it's stupid. Just have the kids take some food and let them use that scene to bond. You know what I mean? And get closer together or something. I don't care. But Tyson and Lex, right now, neither of them can compromise on how they feel about the situation. And so they're both causing the wedge. And I understand both of their points of view, you know? Like, I get how they both feel. And it sucks. It sucks. You can't find, you just, at that moment, you can't find your way through. You know, you're just butting up against each other constantly. They're going to get there. They're going to figure it out. But right now, they're just not there.
I would also say, whereas we were talking about the blocking in the scene with Alice and Ned being all wrong, I actually really liked the blocking towards the end of this scene when they both kind of resigned to how they feel. He's on the bed in the most openness that he can possibly be, and she is standing in front of him. And I thought it was a really nice way of showing that even though they have this going on, they still have a connection with one another, as opposed to what we saw with Alice and Ned, where the blocking was just all over the place and the message was lost. These are two people who would like to find a way through this, but because they're only 16 and they got married, they don't know how to sort of get past this impasse.
Yeah, I like that too. They're both still trying. Like, why else would they still be fighting about it? You know what I mean? Like, if neither of them cared enough, it would be so easy to simply walk away. Like, it's not worth it to me to do this with you. Lex keeps coming back to fight with his wife because they're fighting for each other, which I do like. You know, again, I just really love them as a couple. They are fighting for each other, you know, even though it's exhausting and it sucks and it's repetitive. But they wouldn't be fighting for each other so hard constantly if they didn't care, you know, like Lex especially would just walk away from this. Tysanne would totally walk away from this if she didn't want to be with this man, you know, and
yeah.
Yeah, they're both at fault, but I don't think either of them are bad for being at fault, I guess. You know what I mean? Like they're both in the wrong in some way, but I'm not like mad at either one of them for it, I guess.
Okay, I'm going to be on the wrong side of the panel then today, because I'm going to make a stand here and say that I think Tysanne is in the wrong at this point in time.
That's fair.
Okay, yeah, they're both coming at it the wrong way and they're both making mistakes, but I think Tysanne continuing to care for this murderer, this kidnapper, this enslaver, I think is what is ruining this marriage.
Yeah, I agree.
Lex is out of order as well. Keeping on telling her that like she's done something she hasn't done with him. But I think Tysanne's approach is almost worse because of her closeness with the Guardian. So I'm going to kind of make a stand on that.
And no, I 100% agree with that. Like, she knows how he feels about the situation. Okay, knows what may help fix their problems, and she's not like Liz said, she's not that willing to compromise. And Lex isn't willing to compromise. But Tysanne's not helping. She's not helping at all.
There's a point on that. Okay, even though I think they're both to blame, I'll give you guys a point in the fact that I actually do think Lex is trying harder than she is. Whereas, for example, he's actually putting an effort in to not make a fuss about certain things. But yeah, how else is he supposed to react to she's in the cage doing the Guardian's hair? You know what I mean? Especially when he's just been reminded of their, like, it's being shoved in his face. Whereas, for example, he made the compromise. I'm not going to attack the Guardian. I'm not going to go anywhere near him. I'm not going to do anything that would tempt me to do something that I know upsets you. You don't want me to beat this guy up. I really, really want to beat this guy up, but I know it would upset you, so I won't do it. So you got to give him points, because there's nothing stopping Lex from just going in the cage and getting some punches in to feel better about what this guy did and how he's come between he and his wife. But he's not doing it, and the reason he's not doing it is because it would upset Tysanne. She would find it wrong, even though in Lex's mind it's totally justified, right? And yet Tysanne isn't willing to do a single thing that would make Lex feel better about the situation. Like, it does feel like she's like, he is at least trying to not do the thing that would upset his wife, and his wife isn't willing to not do something that would upset her husband. You know, so I'll give you points there.
Yeah, that's kind of ultimately what I kind of feel, because I feel like Lex, his fears and feelings about what Tysanne has done, I mean, that's a lot harder to kind of walk back, rather than Tysanne simply just doing a little bit less for the Guardians, just not taking so much 24-hour care of him. That's such a simple step she could do that would ease the tension. So that's
kind
of
defending him all the time.
Yeah, just step back a little bit. Just a little bit. I think that would help immensely, but that's kind of why I feel it's a bit unbalanced, and I do kind of feel like Tysanne is...
I mean, just to play devil's advocate from the other side, from the Tysanne side, do you think that what would have helped to maybe give them more a balance in this argument, so we could see both of their sides a bit more clearly, is maybe if no one was taking responsibility for the Guardian, and that Tysanne had to do it because, like, Andy and Tally aren't doing their feeding, May doesn't want to do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I think is great. They will address that in, like, the next one or two episodes, when these two finally do find their compromise, when they finally realize, like, I don't want to jump into it, but just to put what you're saying into context, they will realize that because they're not willing to find a compromise, their marriage is about to end, and they walk away from it, only to realize, I don't want to walk away from this. I want to find a way to make this work. And then they do find a compromise. where she expresses, I need to make sure he's being cared for. I can't live with myself if he's not being cared for properly. And Lex is like, what if I did it? Because it bothers me that you're doing it.
Yeah.
And so, and it's important to you, so I'll do it. And she's like, that will work for me. As long as I know he's being taken care of, I won't have to do the thing that upsets you. Mm. And you're willing to compromise and do the thing that matters to me. So they actually do get
there. I actually forgot about that. I did forget about that.
So. I really love that. They're just not there in this episode, you know?
Yes. Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Which, again, fair. They are, as you said, incredibly young, and they both believe they're right. And in some ways, they both are right, even though I more agree with Lex than I do Tyson. So, yeah, they do get there. And it's freaking one of my favorite moments ever. But I had to speak about it because of where we are, you know, that they actually do get there and find a compromise. And
I also have to say that, again, we just don't get any development really with Tyson. This is an opportunity to develop her, for her to be looking after the Guardian more because of maybe the guilt she feels and the involvement of what went on with the Chosen. But we don't get any development. So it is.
No, it's just her. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, again, another missed opportunity.
Yeah, there's so much more we could have learned about Tyson to strengthen her motivation for being this way, especially when you take in her past when she hasn't been this way. Again, we had to speculate that it had a lot to do with Alice loving her that taught Tyson how to love in return. But she flips the switch so hard with the Guardian. You're just like, where the frick did this come from?
Right, right.
You know, because you weren't like this, Tyson. You weren't the kind of person who would bend over backwards to help a person in emotional distress. That wasn't you. I'm sorry. It wasn't. I still love you, but that wasn't you. You were far more distant and cool. And like I said, if you really needed to fix someone, Celine was right there. And you didn't give a crap about Celine's mental space.
And I would say that Tyson was more aligned with Lex and Jack in the way that they were like, you do you. She was very much morally ambiguous some of the time. And that has like you say, that has disappeared.
Yeah.
And you're just like, where did this come from? And they could have taken this opportunity to tell us something about her past and, you know, where she came from and why when she decides to love, she loves so freaking hard.
You know what I mean? Size. Right.
Something, yeah.
But no, we still don't learn anything about her. We still don't really get any real reason for why this matters to her so much. Like, it's almost as if she has amnesia about who the Guardian was, you know? Mm. And I'd understand if this was the only side of the Guardian she'd ever seen. That would make so much sense. If Tyson had never seen his evil, if she'd never seen it, she'd only seen him like this helpless, broken man in the cage. And is like, no, I can't let you people attack him. I can't let you throw stones at him, because she didn't have that experience. But instead, it's like she just completely forgot what he was capable of and the things he did, and that people have a right to be hurt and to not like him. And instead, you're treating him like he was somehow the victim in this whole thing. And it's like, where did that come from?
You can't be wrong. It's her ego. Asan's always had a big ego and wanting to be right.
And I'd like to know why. I'd like to know where that comes from.
Same.
You know, I'd like to know, you could use that. You could do something with Danny. Danny was a perfect example of showing somebody having a very good reason for needing to do what they're doing and needing to be right about it.
I'm still waiting for that. It's been 32 episodes. But going back to the lack of development for Tyson and that her motivations are not very clear, I think it, because she is underdeveloped, I think it then leads the audience to side more with Lex in this argument, because he has had a lot of development. He's gone on this journey. Like we said, you can see that he is trying. And I think that also plays a factor in this as well.
It just makes her seem, stubborn for not a very strong reason.
Yeah.
Because the reason she's being stubborn is because she cares about the Guardian. He needs someone. But it's like, we need more than that to understand why it matters so much to you, because you are an unfleshed out character who is been quite inconsistent at times.
A line that they gave Amber way, way back at the start of this season was about her sister being in a cult. And it would have been so easy for them to give Tysanne something about, you know, when she was a child, she interacted with people who had mental illness or there was mental illness in her family. And that has really triggered her with how the Guardian is behaving. And she feels responsible.
Yeah, we covered that. We were like, it was so easy. It came out of nowhere, Amber having a sister and her sister being a cult. But it set the groundwork for why she would be invested in helping Trudy and how she might be able to help Trudy because she had experience.
Yeah.
Boom. It was very easy, even though we were like, what? Where did that come from?
Oh, okay.
It solved the whole thing. Boom, one sentence. That was it, you know? And now we have no questions about how she was able to fix Trudy. We didn't need to see it. We just know she could do it, and she had experience, and she was invested in doing it. Ta-da! That's all you needed. Tysanne does not get
magic
any of that, and you're left going, why? I love you, but why?
Yeah,
why are you why? You?
Are we really left going, I love you, though?
I love her. I'm not saying you do. I was speaking for me, sweetheart. Don't worry. I would not force any of those emotions onto you.
I appreciate
you. I wouldn't dare.
I love her as well, Liz. So you've got another one in your fan club. We should get t-shirts.
I know. I was speaking for myself. I love her, but I feel the same frustration that other people do with her at this point in time. Where I'm just like, there are other times, you know, I stand up for her, but I'm right now, I'm just like, girl, you trying me. You trying my patience.
Do we think that the lack of development in Tysanne actually correlates to her relationship with Lex in season two? Because until they actually got together and got married, she had a lot of development with Alice. We kind of saw her character going on this sort of mini journey where she discovered that she had a heart and emotions and she felt guilty for the way she had treated people. And then when they get together, yes, she has this supreme mother storyline, but really she never kind of goes outside of being Lex's wife trapped in the mall. Whereas we don't think about Lex in terms of, oh, that's Tysanne's husband with the rebels, if you know what I mean.
I don't think it has anything to do with, oh, she married Lex and then she just stopped growing. I think it just had to do with the writing. You know what I mean? Like, she and Lex get together at the tail end of season two. Season two was a very strong season when it came to character writing and storytelling. And so there, we just got a lot of great development, whether or not you liked what direction the character was going in, you can't deny it was really great writing, exploring the characters in season two. Season three is just full of bad writing. And so, yeah, any of her progress stopped, you know what I mean? They didn't really know what to do with her except for the storyline with the Guardian. And I just think it's a consequence of bad writing. It just happened to correlate with, oh, she got married, and then the bad writing really kicked in. And
no, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just, they just happened around the same time, you know. And I mean, same thing happened with Ebony, you know. And I just think it's,
well, everyone takes a nosedive.
Yeah, everybody takes a nosedive.
I mean, Exhibit A, Alice. Let's be honest.
So that's just season three for you.
At least this is in line with what we know about Tysanne. This is kind of in line, like you said, Maggie, about her ego and her need to be right. Yeah. This is in line with that. What we've seen from Alice is just a million miles away from who she is.
Oh, for sure. 100.
So yeah, I think most of the characters just suffer from that, you know, and you just spend all your time trying to figure out their motivations and why they're doing the things they do. And sometimes it does make a little sense. You're like, okay, I guess that works, you know, but the work is just not being put in to continue letting these people grow and change as you do, especially at this age, at this time in your life. You do not stay stagnant, you know. You're
especially with all this stuff that's happened to them.
Right. Yeah. You're constantly reinventing yourself and learning new. You aren't this, when you're a teenager, you're not the same person you were 2 months ago. You know what I mean?
Like, no, it should not be the same people.
No.
The growth chart is exponential as you're becoming who you are and figuring out who you are. And yeah, it's just bad, really bad writing. That's they're all suffering from in many ways. Because you see where they're, when the writing is pretty good, you see stuff. Like some good, there were some good bright spots in season three, but it starts to feel like they just can't handle an ensemble anymore. You saw them struggling a little bit with it in season two, but season three, it really kicks in that they're having trouble struggling with an ensemble with so many characters to do something with.
I was going to say that. Yeah. They let some, you know, they push some and then they let some fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
Even though the whole show started as a character study, exploring every single one of these kids surviving in the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like,
they've survived.
Right. You can see who the favorites are, you know, and who are definitely the.
Yeah. I was about to say it feels less like a struggle, but more they just have their favorites now. I just want to focus on them.
These are the main characters and these are the secondary.
And then the tertiaries. And
yeah,
they're just not balancing it well at all. Mm. They just, and you can feel their disinterest.
We had this a bit in season two, didn't we, with Dal? And he definitely became...
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. You could definitely see that they were starting to struggle with it in season two, losing interest in all of the characters and, you know, giving a ton of attention to some and then ignoring some others. But it's in season three where it really hits you in the gut, where it's just like, I don't feel like you care at all about some of these characters. You don't know what...
They didn't.
No.
Yeah.
So that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode.
Just been checking around outside. Found the stuck near the entrance.
If you want to see Amber and Trudy again, you gotta hand over the Guardian.
So, panel, pretending that you didn't know that it was Ned, did you like that they had actually done some work to build it up to make it seem like it was Moz?
Yeah, I actually liked it as a plot point and a cliffhanger, even though it's like, I don't know why this wasn't your first thought. You know, that it had something to do with the Chosen or whatever, you know, or that Amber and Trudy being targeted makes so much freaking sense because of who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, the parts they've played, especially recently, you know, but I, you know, ignoring the fact that it never occurred to them that there could be a real reason that somebody probably took the girls. I did like that it comes full circle that somebody took them. And it's because they want the Guardian. Mm. And they did a good job laying the groundwork with Moz. That would be the first person. If I was Bray, she'd be my first suspect.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just a reminder that she's still out in the street, still making threats, you know, stuff like that. And just reminding you. So it's not a bad red herring. It's actually a pretty decent one.
My only issue is that they never tell us what he's actually supposed to, I know he has to hand over the Guardian, but there's sort of no time, no location, no threats as to what's going to happen to the pair of them if they don't do this. We kind of have to get that into our minds. All of that is missing from this. We don't know where we're meant to take the Guardian, even if we do give in to these demands.
That's one of the few things I like about Ned being the kidnapper. He is not very bright.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so certain things like that actually work out. I like the fact that Ned has been set up as someone that the rest of the Mallrats are not acknowledging exists, so that they don't seem to put two and two together that he wasn't around when the girls went missing. Oh, he conveniently was walking around and found the note at the entrance. You know what I mean? Like, and the fact that, the note says this is what we want, but doesn't give any further details as to how that's to be accomplished, you know? And it's like, Ned would miss those details, you know?
Yes.
And like later on in this kidnapping storyline, you see little things like Ned didn't think of. It's not till someone says it. And then he's like, oh, crap, I need to write another note because I didn't think of that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. So that is
my bad.
One of the few things I actually like about Ned being the kidnapper, that he's really bad at this. He used magic to get the girls out of the mall, but
magic.
Otherwise, I like that. The fact that this note does not have any real detail or how Bray's supposed to accomplish this thing if he wanted to. Right?
But you said it so well that the red herring about it being Moz, but actually for the audience, the truth is right there. You don't have to read too hard into the lines to like piece it together. But when you first watch it, when you don't know, the red herring's really good, even though they've given us the answer and the person delivering it is the one that actually did it. It's brilliant. Why could they not have done this for the whole season?
Actually, we're interested in this plot line. You know what I mean? Like, you, when they actually really like a plot line. Okay, I can't even say that. That's not fair. Because they completely bungled Amber's return plot line. And they were seriously interested in that one. And it's still total crap. So I can't say that when they're interested, they do a good job. But they're more likely to do a good job when they're interested in the plot
they'll
line,
at least try.
Let's be honest, why the Amber return thing didn't work is because they didn't want to make Bray or Amber look bad. And because they didn't want to make either of them look bad, they make both of them look bad and stupid.
Yeah, we covered that, definitely. I did like this little cliffhanger. I like the way it's shot. I love the lighting in the scene. Mm. You know, it's very clear that the dinner didn't happen. So, yeah, there's something about it. I like the way it's filmed. You know, the lighting is so warm, but it also is so dark where they are, the candlelight, Lex and Ebony sitting there, you know, and Bray's despair. Like, what the frick? This doesn't make sense. Where could they be? You know, and just the way Ned comes in the background, even the way he delivers his line. I was, you know, walking around and I found this at the entrance, and you're not paying attention to him in the background, but if you actually look at him, you can see, like, again, Bevan, it's all due to Bevan, but you can see even from his body language that he didn't just find this note, you know what I mean? Like, he's just the truth hidden in plain sight. It's just really nice the way it's done. He's looking at Bray like he knows exactly what this note would say, you know, and he's just waiting for the reaction he believes he's about to get, you know. It's just really well handled, and I liked Wayne's reaction to reading that letter and realizing, like, oh my gosh, you know, my worst fear, they've been taken, you know.
Yep.
Was it his worst fear though? Because he didn't really even think about that, did he, initially?
That's fair. I take it back. Clearly his worst fear is that she would run off again and not break up with him, because she's done it before. So that's why he was so quick to believe she just didn't pack anything and left the Pride. That was his worst fear, which, you know what, given their history, fair.
All right, cool. That brings Series 3, Episode 37 to a close. Thank you very much to our panel. And if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast, or even just leave us a message, we're available on all the major platforms. Just search for Conversations on Eagle Mountain or thetribe.co.uk. So we'll see you next time for Episode 38. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.